Chloe, it's Mental Mate. You may, if you've been on our socials, seen that we've shared a lot of stuff, particularly if you're in the Facebook Circularity group. There's been a lot of stuff shared from Mental Mate and what is going on there, which is very inspirational and very cool. So, hello, Chloe.
Hello.
in a nutshell, what is Mental Mate about?
It's about helping people with mental health issues, giving them free counselling, which is really, really expensive normally. You really struggle as well to get any counselling through the NHS at the moment, especially in a quick way. So it's a place that people can come to, have a chat with a counsellor, usually within a week or two, and then we go through what their needs are, and however long they need the counselling for, we support it.
Fantastic. So you've got a selection of, it's basically like almost like private counselling, where you go to.
Yeah, effectively. Both of them are private counsellors. We have one that is for children specifically, the other one that deals with adults. All the sessions can be face-to-face in private clinics, or they can be conducted via Zoom.
The way you talk about it, you sound like you've got some experience of that world.
Yeah.
Is that something you're happy to talk to us about?
Yeah, definitely. I struggled with my own mental health in my early 20s. That was a really, really horrible time, and that lasted around 3 years. If it wasn't for somebody dragging me down to the doctors and being very, very persistent with those doctors, I never would have got the mental health care that I really, really needed. And those sessions were vital to me. It went up to around 1 to 2 a week at least at one stage when I was quite bad. And I genuinely feel if I didn't have that person to talk to, I don't think I would be here today. It was horrendous. They also then worked and referred me to different people because I had an alcohol problem. And it really, really helped in, I don't know, it reared its ugly head again after having my son in April. So I suffered with post-traumatic stress disorder. And again, I knew what I needed to do, but this time I could afford private counselling. I knew I wouldn't have got in contact with the NHS, or I wouldn't have had the support quick enough, especially with having a newborn baby. I think you need to be quite healthy and you need to see someone as soon as possible when you notice something's wrong. And I started to have weekly sessions again, and really quickly, I think within around 8-9 weeks, I just felt fabulous again, and I managed to work through everything. And it just really, really helped. I just can't imagine people that have to sit on a problem that's going around in their mind for years on end, and the damage that could cause.
And that is something that is prevalent in today's society, because people are still afraid of saying something.
Yeah.
They don't want to come and talk to anybody. So have you found that you've had a steady flow of people contacting Mental Mate?
Yeah. Definitely. We've had children, so parents getting in contact with us and mentioning that there's something basically wrong with their child and they don't know what. We've had other people contact us, and sometimes they just write down on a message their email and they say, can I get some help? Simple as that. And other times they are so desperate to talk that I get paragraph after paragraph of what's wrong. And again, you know, I'd forward that straight on to a counsellor. Tell that individual that we're here and that the counsellor will be in contact and thank you, and we go from there. I think being really honest myself with my own mental health and talking about it as much as I do, and it being covered by different newspapers, has really helped as well, because some people find it a taboo subject to sort of sit there and say, yeah, I really, really struggled with my mental health and I used to be addicted to alcohol. You know, some people cringe a little bit inside, like, oh my gosh. But it's okay to talk about it. You would talk about having an ailment, like a medical condition or cancer, for instance. And, you know, you should just openly talk about mental health too. Just say, I don't feel good. I feel rubbish. I need some help.
Yeah, and we talked about this with Joe in one of the very early podcasts, and I likened it to breaking your leg.
Yeah.
It's just the same thing. It takes time to heal.
That's
right.
You have
to work in it. You have to follow the guidelines. And you need to go and talk to somebody about it.
Mm.
It needs to be, doesn't always have to be a professional. If you've got those networks set up, but talking to somebody is the first step of finding out what's wrong. And
that's it. And like you just touched on, it doesn't have to be a professional. So Mental Mate's going to grow in lots of different ways, and that's to provide some social behaviours, getting people involved with different communities, being outdoors, some sports. We've just taken on some tennis courts. You know, I want it to grow to the fact that some people just need to get out of the house, and that's the concern, and that's making them feel unwell. Or it can just get people to come out, and then we can lead into counselling. I don't think there's just one solution for your mental health problem. You might need medication, you might need to talk, and you actually might need to change your lifestyle. There's lots of different aspects to it.
And actually hitting the multiple of those things, or at least providing the opportunity for those things, is a good way of doing that. I think, you know, it's that thing that you shared the other day, Rob, about, you know, the opposite of sobriety isn't I can't remember the word now. The opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. Sorry, yeah. I've got the words wrong. But that idea that Kelly alluded to that on his podcast with us, Destruction of Choice, when he was talking about his journey through, you know, working with his addictions with alcohol, and he said something very similar, that it was the connection with opportunities and with people and with projects and with ideas, and that's the thing that sort of helped him through, well as, you know, the counselling, the medication and those sort of things as well. It's not as easy as probably pop a pill and sauce there.
There's more to do. And that tends to be what happens at your initial doctor's appointment. So when I went in my early 20s, I was prescribed something called citalopram, and I was also given Valium, I think it's called diazepam, most commonly known, to help, you know, calm, sleep, etc. And all that ends up happening is you end up becoming quite, if you've got an addictive personality, which I do, you then end up addicted to them. And before you know it, that level of drug doesn't work anymore, and they have to up it. And so you start off on a really low dose, which did nothing. So you go back 2 weeks later for review, they call it, and they just keep upping and upping and upping it.
Just keep adding to it.
It does. And then when you finally feel better, if you finally got in contact with a good counsellor, you've brought on, you know, a great hobby, etc., you then got to wean yourself off this drug, which is really strong. And so you need help through that as well. So the medication has its place, but you can't just sit on it for weeks on end and keep up in the dosage.
No, and from experience, some of those doses then just numb you to everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, you're in a better place because you're not feeling depressed.
Yeah.
Because you're not feeling anything.
That's it.
There's just a void of emotions, and that bit of it, there's just nothing there. And that's, for me, talking to different people, has been the bit that has worried them, is that there isn't any emotion there. It's not that they'd rather feel the depression to actually know that they're still feeling something. The medication, the side effects are often worse than the thing they're trying to fix.
Right.
And then they start giving you more pills to fix the side effects from what's set you up. It becomes a vicious cycle.
It is, and then because you're on such a high dosage, like you said, you become numb to things. I remember one day, I think I actually sat on a couch because my partner had gone out to work, and I didn't move. And I can't remember moving at all day. I just didn't notice that as being like wrong, like something. I just didn't have any want or need for anything at all. And he was like, "Have you moved once?" When he got home, and I was like, "No." And it was just, that's just not normal behaviour, is it? And that's not feeling better. That's not being better. But yes, I'm not sort of crying as much. I'm not hysterical, you know, but that's not where you want to be. You know, you have to be in a good place with the medication. It needs to be managed correctly, and it needs to be alongside talking to somebody.
Mm. Yeah, and that's a big resurgence now, isn't it? Talking therapies.
Yeah, well, somebody was talking to me actually the other day. There's a type of therapy where you just go for a walk and talk.
Mm.
So they're not even highly, you know, highly trained counsellors, for instance. You just go for a chat and you talk. And it's just really, really helpful. Talk about anything. You don't even need to have a specific agenda. But you'd be surprised some people don't have that support in their network. They just don't. I do. I can call somebody up right now and just have a meaningless chat. It'll make me feel better. But lots of people just don't have that. Or they don't have a positive person for that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Having that positive aspect to it as well is, it's somebody who's willing to listen.
Yeah.
Because whilst the world is more connected, we are less connected as people.
Mm.
Because it's through a screen, it's through different things rather than meeting up in person.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm guilty of that. But I'm a on the flip side of that, I'm also quite comfortable not talking to people for a long time, and then just dropping in and out of stuff. But I'm conscious that other people need more than that.
Definitely.
So I'm always open to that thing to listen to. But it is hard for people to reach out, I think. I think people feel embarrassed just to ask for a conversation, not even mentioning mental health, just literally going, admitting that they need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
It just makes it hard for them.
I think there's a thing about, you know, routine and ritual to a certain extent. So the thing that me and Steve Bloor have been doing is going for that run, and we started that Couch to 5K thing, and we've dropped off a bit since we've hit the 5K, but we've still done it a bit, you know, done a couple of laps and all that sort of stuff for the place where we run. But we both had ourselves that actually part of that is the 5-minute walk when we're having a rattle about different things. And that's as important as the run, because we're, you know, connecting and talking about different things. And most of it's nonsense.
That's it, but you just need that nonsense.
Yeah.
I think it's valuable, most definitely. And you can't always lean on just people that you live with for that either. Sometimes you need to have that exterior voice.
Yeah. The problem is only having a network that's the people you live with, becomes then you're all in that same space with those same concerns, and then things build in those situations because of reactions, to the point where then you need somebody, you've got to have somebody else to talk to, otherwise there's a tension that builds that isn't it's inescapable unless there's a valve outlet somewhere else.
Yeah.
And whether that's sport, going out with a band, just going and talking to somebody at the bus stop.
If we talk about Reggie?
Yeah.
So the PTSD is what reared its ugly head this year. April the 12th, which was Easter Sunday, my son Reggie was born in the early hours of the morning. And instantly, you know, we had a water birth. As soon as he came out, there was something wrong, basically. He was grunting. He didn't look right. We just knew something wasn't quite right, something with his breathing. And the midwife was trying to stay quite calm, and she was saying, oh, we'll just need to, you know, suck some fluid out from his throat and he'll be okay. He's just swallowed some water. And she did all of that. And she was sort of looking at him, and then she walked off, basically. And she came back and she decided to try and give him some oxygen. And she left him under the heat for a while, and she walked off again. And the second time she walked off, she left us for quite a considerable amount of time. It wasn't until around 3 hours after he was born that things started to get really, you know, quite nasty. And he wasn't breathing properly. He wasn't supporting his own body. So they called for an ambulance, and they took us on blue lights to the LRI. Again, at that point, I had two other midwives that came in the ambulance, although my partner couldn't come in the ambulance with me. There was four of us in the back, and they were sort of chatting away about their morning, how they'd had to come in as an emergency, and, you know, just conversating between themselves. And Reggie was just on a little stretcher, and they were trying to hold an oxygen mask to him. Again, they tried to keep me quite calm and said, well, you know, he's just going to have something sucked out of his throat and he'll be okay. When we got to LRI, they took us straight into the neonatal unit, and the consultants immediately heard the noise he was making and just stood up and shook their PPE on and just sort of flew over. And it was at that point when I looked around the ward that I was on. I wasn't in a normal hospital. It was a specialised unit for really, really poorly babies. And they ushered the midwives away, and it just went from bad to worse. Then he was really, really unwell that morning, and they lost him twice. Nathan had gone home, Nathan's my partner, so I was just completely alone, really, watching all of this. A nurse tried to get me to move back, but because I couldn't leave him, I just couldn't leave him. So I watched some horrendous procedures that morning as they ventilated him, etc. Later on that day, he started to stabilise, and I thought, you know, I reckon we can go home. My daughter, my middle child, she's autistic, and for anybody else to try and care for her, it's really, really difficult. So I needed to go home. I went home, and they called at around 3 a.m, and I knew to get a phone call. At that time, it wasn't going to be good, and they just said basically that he was really struggling to support himself now, and they'd had to use a muscle relaxant to effectively paralyse his body, and they ventilated him. So they were, it was like a life support, they were just doing everything for him. So we went down straight away. Obviously now, you know, they let Nathan in. He was one of the, well, he was the poorest baby at the time, so Nathan was allowed in. In that unit, parents, both parents can go in because their children are so sick. And we stayed with him. We stayed with him all week. They got us a room. He did only stay there for around a week. They thought that things were looking really, really bad. We had those sort of difficult conversations, and he just did a massive U-turn. I remember sitting there one day just looking at him, and he twitched. And so I turned to his nurse. He had a designated nurse that watched over him all the time. I said, "Did you see that?" And she said, "No." And I was like, "He moved." And she went, "Oh, Chloe, he can't. I know you want him to move, but he can't move. He won't move for some time." And I said, "Oh, okay." And I watched, and he did it again. And you know, you think, am I going crazy? You know, like, am I just seeing things here? And it was about midnight, so I went off to my room, went to bed, set my alarm 4 a.m. to check on him again. Came back, and she's smiling. And I was like, "Oh, you know, it's not, you know what you're smiling at me for." And she said he was moving. And he started to fight off a muscle relaxant drug that is supposed to keep him in a coma. And so they just let him. They just let him do it, and he woke up. And then he started to fight with his his ventilator tubing, trying to pull it out. This is a newborn baby. And so they took it off him, and they said, "You can sit here if you want to. We're going to take it all away. And if he breathes on his own, he breathes on his own. If he doesn't, it will be obviously another one of those emergency buzzers will go off, and they'll just all have to jump on him and, you know, do it all over again." But he did. He just breathed. It was the weirdest, worst time of my entire life. He still needed antibiotics and care. We were moved to another hospital. So we went from fantastic care at Leicester to horrendous care. And I was split again from my support network, which I think is really vital in that situation. And I was made to be in a room, just me and Reggie, completely alone. And I couldn't leave. I couldn't walk anywhere. I couldn't see my partner or family. I think that's because of COVID, and that's where we had to stay. And I had to watch over him 24/7 because a number of times they would try and take his blood twice when they'd already done it once. They tried to give him a medication for the wrong baby because they picked up the wrong chart. And you know, I think that at the end of the worst week ever, where I held it together really, really well, and you know, surprisingly was really stable, I think that at the end of it is just what tipped me. I just was in pure panic, and I couldn't wait to leave. And at one point, they weren't even going to let me leave. It wasn't until my local doctors helped and supported me out of there. Otherwise, you know, they wanted to hold on to me for even longer, and there was no medical need. So yeah, that was really, really tricky. And it was the next day after I'd got out of hospital that I messaged the counsellor, Sophie, who works with us now with Mental Mate, and I just said, "I need your help." And she Zoom called me, and she said, "You're the strongest woman I know. So for you to say that you need help, something really bad's happened." And I just burst into tears. Mm. And we just went from there. And that's where our sessions began. And she told me she was treating me for PTSD on our second session, which was the following week. And she carried out something called rewind therapy, which was to take me all the way through that trauma again and let me walk away from it. And I didn't think that would work. I thought that sounded a little bit like hypnotherapy to me, and I wasn't overly sold on the idea. Okay. And it did work. It must have done. Because before then, I was having so many flashbacks. An ambulance would set me off. If I saw an ambulance, I'd find it really, really difficult. And yeah, a number of things. Or a baby, if they start coughing or choking on their milk, which is just common, it's normal, I would be like, "Oh my God, what's wrong with him?" You know, because it all started like that. So yeah. It was a horrible thing to go through when you expect us to have a nice little bundle of joy. And obviously now he's amazing. But it just made me really want to help other people, because I got that help immediately because I reached out to someone and I could afford to pay for it. But if I didn't, I'd dread to think how I would have coped with going to the hospital appointments for his follow-ups. And, you know, he has to have medication even to this day, and I have to fight for that medication because it's so expensive. And I genuinely don't think I would have been able to do all of that if I didn't have the help I got so early on.
And was it following that that sort of Mental Mate was born, so to speak?
Yeah, I just mentioned on... I didn't mention it on a session. It was after a session. I messaged Sophie and I said, just hear me out. I know it might be a crazy idea. You might say it's rubbish. But you know how I got the sessions really, really quickly with yourself and I could afford them. What if we set something up that we ask people to donate to it? Because lots of people know people that need mental health support or have had a mental health issue themselves and would find it interesting. And we just pay for their counselling. And she said, you know, I think you're actually onto something here. And I was like, I'll do all the legwork. You see the clients, you still get paid. Let's see how it goes. And it just ran really fast. Like on the second week, we were in the newspaper and then it went into another newspaper. Now it's going into a magazine and it's just sort of ran really quick. It's grown and we've got around 15 people now that we're helping and they're in full-time counselling.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It's a good thing you can do.
I think the beauty of it is, for hearing it, is you've created something brilliant from nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you've just had the idea and ran with it.
There's
so many people that have the idea, but then when it comes to the running with it bit, they fall over somewhere.
Put it on the shelf rather than start running with it.
Yeah. It just becomes, I had this idea, and it never goes further than that idea point, and you've taken it and it's become something. So that's amazing.
I'm like that. That's my personality. That's why I have so much going on. I'm so busy and tired. But I just have to do something. Once it's there, I've got to do it. And I really fight for things as well. If I see something that's wrong and incorrect, then I don't just set stand with it. And I just think it's wrong that some people would have been subjected to that and then left. You know, I should have come out of that hospital with help. I should have had an immediate referral. I shouldn't have been allowed to just go home and be left.
But that's the problem, isn't it? It was at the forefront. This Prime Minister said it as well, but the previous Prime Minister, that was one of her first tenets, wasn't it? Mental health will be improved.
Yeah.
Nothing done.
I didn't stop crying in the hospital that I was at, and they saw that, and they did nothing. They just said, I understand you want to go home, but we can't yet. And, you know, they just never did anything. Nothing at all.
The professionals in the NHS are amazing before we get any messages.
Oh, yeah. The first time I had a mental health concern, it was fantastic. And that counsellor was an NHS counsellor and he saved me. He was wonderful.
Yeah. It's just like any other profession, though. There are some people who are great and there are others that are there because whilst they might have originally had a call in or seen it as something else, it's a job now and they possibly don't like doing that job anymore. And that is conveyed in the way they act and treat people.
Yeah, 100%. You know, going through the special needs journey with my daughter as well has been mentally draining, and I think that probably contributed to how I felt after having Reggie. It was just that in itself, it all depended on who was your paediatrician, who was your speech and language therapist, who saw the action when, to get a diagnosis and then to get your child or adult the support that they really desperately need. And, you know, if you aren't somebody that can push and fight for things, you are left, I feel. And that's where I wanted to have something that was really, really accessible. You don't need to tell us a thing. You can just say, I need help. And I'll say, OK, what's your email? And we just do it like that.
That's a great thing.
Simple. Do you think that sometimes, and I'm sort of reading between a few lines, you both said actually, and do you think that sometimes the red tape gets in the way of the simplicity? So the fact that perhaps there are so many systems in place it creates an unnecessary bureaucracy, whereas what you've done is gone, we just need people to see counsellors.
Yeah, I do, and we did have a counsellor that just kept wanting to bring up the red tape. It was somebody that we wanted to bring on board. We basically need another counsellor involved, and having a conversation with a particular person, that's all they wanted to do was bring on red tape, and I just instantly knew that wasn't the counsellor for us, and we didn't go any further with the conversation. There's always somebody that just sees sort of negatives or has to go a really, really long way around it, and we're the kind of people that know you need help and we are just going to get you the help. It doesn't need to be complicated.
Yeah,
it just doesn't.
There isn't a distinction between health and social care and well-being. Yet we live in a society where social care and looking after people from a sense of well-being is thought of as volunteer work. something else other than what should be funded by the state, as in the NHS. There's a reason that minister is called the Minister for Health and Social Care.
Yeah.
It should all be connected, and it should be, NHS was created from birth to death. Well, if we're going to do that, we need to look at social care and people's wellbeing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more things that cost so much more in the NHS for dealing with people that if the social and wellbeing aspect was in there, it wouldn't cost nowhere near as much.
And some of the things that we're talking about collaborating on is actually, the equivalent, because I've heard the term social prescribing sort of, you know, chucked about. And again, I think that's, you know, there's probably going to be some bureaucracy involved in that at some point, but in general it seems to be that same thing of actually, you know, what you said earlier about it isn't just you know, the medication and the counselling, actually it's just connecting to activities and other people. And you talk about the walking talking counselling is a great example of that.
Yeah,
that sort of prescribing something that isn't necessarily one-to-one counselling session or medication subscription, is just getting people out to.
It's a good distraction as well. Mm. I remember when I was doing CBT, so that's cognitive behavioural therapy, I've still got the book now, and I look back over my books from when I had mental health issues, and I used to sit with counsellors, and I used them to create posts and just subjects for the media pages, because there's just so many examples in there of what you can do yourself, what you can do with other people, and a lot is about being out and creating distractions or relationships or hobbies, things to help you get through a period of time that you aren't happy.
Yeah, slightly self-aware. I've talked about it a couple of times on here. One of my favourite ones is choice theory.
Yeah.
Recognising those patterns of behaviour and choosing to behave differently, because the way I react to things, I might not be able to stop something happening to me, but I have the ability to choose how I react to that.
Oh, definitely.
I let that affect me or not affect me.
That's every young adult and adult should learn CBT.
Oh, it should be in schools, definitely. Yeah.
There's that thing which we shared in the group the other day. There's a reason people aren't taught these things, because you can't be a well-mannered drone. I'm not some conspiracy theory nut, but you can't be somebody who goes to work to get a job and earn money to just, you're not taught about money in the sense that this is how you can make money.
You're just taught about where your place is in the system.
Yes. Yeah. And that place in the system, you're not taught to be happy, because if you were taught to be happy, you wouldn't go and do a job you don't like. To make the money you don't need to make, to live in a house you don't need to buy the car you don't need to buy, to do the things you don't need to do.
Yeah. Now I have a really good example of that. I remember being at school and, you know, I went to a really, really good school, and I think, you know, there's the pressure to try and do well there, and then families want you to do quite well. And I remember all I wanted to do was go and train in beauty. And I remember having the conversation, and it was with a head teacher, and they just said, "But you're too smart." That's not exactly what they said, but you're just too smart to do that, and you won't be able to form any relationships at that college because you have a different intelligence. And I just thought, how stupid. Like, that's just really stupid. And so I went into a completely different line of work, and I ended up doing really, really well, and I earned well, and I lived in a really nice house, and that's when I nearly killed myself.
Wow.
Yeah, in that house.
Yeah.
And I remember a stupid paramedic who was the same age as me, and he knew he was because they had my date of birth, and he went, "Why would she try and kill herself living here?" He didn't know I could hear him, and I just thought, oh, you're just so stupid. They're just all materialistic things, and I was like, but I'm just so unhappy. And, you know, people just couldn't get it. And now I work in beauty, and I actually earn better than I did then, because I am intelligent, and you do need intelligence to run a business.
Yeah, it's the same thing about when people call out footballers and celebrities, and they go, "Yeah, but you've got all this," because people see the veneer, they don't see the material behind it and what goes on and how it's built and the foundation that's there, to see, well, actually there's loads of cracks in that.
That's right.
And it's not really built on any firm ground, because a lot of people, like the guys in the sports, they don't go and do anything else that they might be interested in until after football. Because football's the thing that's going to get them out of where they are or where they want to get.
That's it. There's so much more to life, and it is about this just is about enjoying it. I just think so many people have completely lost that idea. I talk all the time about what I would like to do with my future and where I'd like to go, and people are like, but you just can't do that. You're like, but why? You're like, because that's just not what you do.
Yeah. I don't know, when people say you can't do that, that's my it's a challenge, is it?
Yeah.
Lovely.
That's it.
Yeah, we've talked about circularity before, haven't we? And it might grow and it might do stuff, and you go, actually, yeah, I love what we do with circularity. Mm. If that could earn me the money I need to pay for that house I've bought because of the job I've got,
yeah,
then that's fine. But now I'm stuck in that.
I know, you get stuck in that real.
Without stepping away from it, you can't do anything about it.
You need to buy a van and live in it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that would go down. We could be back to Paddy there, couldn't we? Yeah. We're going over the car park.
You've got to take personal responsibility for your own happiness as well, that's it. Mm. And that's the thing with the Mental Mate page, is you have to take personal responsibility to get better. You know, we aren't approaching anybody, and we never will. If somebody just sort of likes what's a post, we never will sort of reach out and go, do you need any help? They do have to message us. Because I think that is really, really important. We don't make it difficult. There are lots of different routes to do that, but they do have to be the one to get in contact. Yeah. I remember someone's mum did it for an adult as well. And I said, that's great. My mum is the person that dragged me down to a doctor. But we do need to know she's ready, because even if you are really, really unwell with your mental health, if you really don't want help, we can't force it. We can't.
Yeah, if you're not ready for change, then you're never going to change.
No, that's it. They've got to get to a point that they will turn up to those appointments and they will sit and they're ready to talk. And that person is doing absolutely amazing. They're ready to be discharged in the next few weeks. And they started off with us and they were really not in a good place at all.
We should say Mental Mate itself, it's not there. If you can afford your own therapy,
you
should go for your own therapy.
Yeah.
It's not to save your money so you can go and spend money on other things. This is really about a service for people who can't afford therapy and need that help.
We have had that problem already. We can't talk too much about it. It was an isolated incident, but it became quite apparent due to the order of Facebook that this individual most certainly could afford their own therapy. And so we do say, if you can't afford the full session, you know, donate whatever you can. The Just Giving page is so easy to just click on and donate a couple of quid up to, you know, whatever you want. But yeah, please don't use the service if you can afford it, but you just don't want to pay, or it might mean that you can't go and get that takeaway twice a week, for instance. You know, we need to make sacrifices in our life for our care. If you can make those sacrifices and pay for it, wonderful. But if not, then you won't be quizzed, you won't be asked to demonstrate it. Come along. They are free for people that need them.
One of the things you talked about earlier was the expansion of Mental Mate and going outside. So how, pray tell, might you be doing that?
The allotment space in Albert Village.
Yeah. So we're collaborating, aren't we? We're doing something or two.
Figure
something out together.
That's it. It's going to be amazing. I think that's just going to be such a valuable resource. Not only does it promote good diet, etc. as well, but it's another place to go and talk to people. There's the physical side as well, because it's going to be hard work getting that up to scratch with how it looks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
We must do the before and after.
Oh, that's going to be really, yeah.
Because
it's going to be amazing.
We had a couple of weeks that the other project in Winston that we've got, the other allotment, before we did our before shot.
Oh, no, you've ruined it.
Yeah.
We missed a big grass at the beginning.
Yeah.
So we'll get it this time. So for those of you that don't know, we have Circularity Grow, which is morphed through different aspects of working with different elements of growing things and spaces for flowers and plants and vegetables and things. And then during the COVID lockdown, that became, let's get an allotment.
Yeah.
You can socially distance, you can do stuff outdoors, it's nice and safe and all the rest of it. And we started that in Winslow. We've then seen a space in Albert Village, which has got some raised beds already in it, overgrown, needs some work, needs some help. And at the same time, we were talking to Chloe and Mental Mate about different things. And so we've ended up going, let's do this bond together.
Yeah. Yeah. And the beauty is that we're, we're now talking about it, obviously through a podcast and publicly, and there'll be some social media posts and different bits, but it's that scary bit where ordinarily you do a project and then you show everyone the project, but what we're saying is a slightly different thing, isn't it, actually? Yeah. We've got something, but to make it work is going to need other people.
Oh, most definitely. I think it's important, especially people with mental health, to come in when it's raw and actually have a sense of achievement to see what you've produced. Obviously they can join at any point, you know, even months down the line when the place is fantastic and we're growing, but to get involved now would be even more beneficial.
Yeah, there's lots to do.
Yeah,
we need the help. Please. Because Chris is really bad with a strimmer. Doesn't know how to turn it on.
Yeah, with anything. Bad with all the things. I've looked at the strimmer and gone, yeah, it looks amazing, but I don't know how to even turn it on. Now, there is a thing though where, like Stephen, who's someone who's been helping out the Winslow one, and he's amazing, isn't he? He's like an expert at most things ever that you need someone to be an expert at in terms of making stuff, sorting stuff out, building stuff, you know, all that. And there was just those where you were both trying to instruct me on very basic things, and I wasn't doing a very good job with the very basic things.
So we were sorting out the base for a shed.
Okay.
Chris felt that was the important time to dig up some weeds in a space that's going to grow grass. Let me dig up the grass from the area that's going to have grass. I'll do that instead of laying this out or digging the hole over there that he's digging or doing
this. So this is what we're dealing with.
Oh, great. See, we need the help.
So what? Okay, how do we get people involved? How can people help? What's the way to do it?
You can contact MentalMate if you need assistance from a counselling point of view. If you want to be involved and volunteer, because we've got Circularity Grows, we've talked about specifically with this with Albert Village, but there's the circularity.org/join us if you want to volunteer and help out specifically. It's always good to follow that route because that gives us a real clear view of what you want to do and how you want to be involved, because there are other aspects to the Circularity project which you'll find there, and you might want to do more than just gardening and looking at the allotment. But do reach out to us in that manner, I think, or join the Facebook group. Just search Circularity Association on Facebook, search MentalMate on Facebook, find us all on there, and reach you that. We're on Twitter as well.
Instagram.
Instagram.
All the things.
Oh, it's all connected now. It's all connected.
Yeah.
I still don't tweet.
I can't work Twitter out.
No, I went on it once and I was completely baffled and just came away.
Yeah. I think if you're good at arguing, you'd be good on Twitter.
I was just about to say it's like a mini rant.
Is it?
Oh, no, is it?
Essentially, there's lots of things on there where people who in everyday life would never dream of saying that to somebody, even though they might be the most annoying person in the world, will still go on Twitter and go, yeah, but is it that? Or there's some great ones about where they correct actual experts on what they're saying.
Oh, yeah, that's the tricky one.
Yeah, it's always fun to watch.
So I think we're going to try and set up some time, aren't we, where people can come down and have a go, where, you know, there's going to be someone there each week initially, and I think because, you know, of working here and other things, the weekend's probably the obvious place to start, isn't it?
So, yeah.
Albert Village, maybe. Is it Saturday you put aside on that?
Saturday afternoons. We'll put specific times out on the socials, so look out for them there. And when this goes out, because, you know, it's not going to go out today when we're recording it, it'll go out when we actually need it to. So look out for those, and we'll put them on the bottom of this. So if you look at that as well on there.
And then Sunday mornings are the Winslow one that we've been looking at, if you want to do that.
Yeah, so we are going to have to, in light of, you won't know when we're recording this, but in light of last night's conversation from good old Boris Johnson, we're going to have to make sure that there's a limit to the amount of people that are there based on the space, due to the fact you can only meet 6 people outside. And obviously, if the 3 of us are there, that means there's only 3 spaces. So we need to work out how we do that. So there's a few little things to work through to make sure we're COVID secure. Yeah, if you want to be involved, come and join us.